turn of a leaf, the call of a bird. The dead are never gone, for they have a pact with the living. I should say before I begin that I understand that September is the worst month in the DC area for mold, and that this year there were the numbers were twice as high as they normally are, so it's all bad. So I apologize if I'm a little stuffy. Last October, right around this time, I stood near the bank of Laurel Run, which is a Chesapeake watershed stream that falls down Pine Grove Mountain to Slab Cabin Creek in the hills outside of State College, Pennsylvania. My brother carried the box, heavier than you'd think, of my father's ashes. Inside, a clear plastic bag held all that we could see remaining of his body. My mother, ever thoughtful, had brought cups we could use to scatter the ashes in the woods. But I, ever the barbarian, wanted to use my hands. I wanted the smooth, sandy feeling on my skin. And when I put my hand in the box, my mother looked away. I carefully placed several handfuls beneath the laurel and the rhododendron growing near the stream's banks. And then I sort of tossed some on some leaf litter, followed a squirrel, tossed some after the squirrel. I looked, and there were ashes under my fingernails. I tossed again, and the wind came up just for a moment, and I was caught in an eddy of my father's ashes. They got into my clothes, my hair. They were swirling around me, and I gasped in surprise and breathed them in and coughed. It took me just a moment to consider how I should feel about this development. Should I be alarmed or kind of disgusted, or maybe have some deep feeling of the shortness of life and that I was going to eventually return to ashes and dust and pass out of memory and nothingness. In the end, though, my reaction was to laugh. Just to laugh out of joy, because my father's ashes, my father's body, some significant part of his being transformed by the energy of fire, was in me, was around me, was clothing me, and a part of me. Today, I invite us to consider the mystery of connectedness through the lens of death. Obviously, I'm considering these issues because of the personal anniversary I just narrated, but also because at the end of this month, we will celebrate the days of the ancestors. Halloween, Samhain, El Día de los Muertos, All Saints, All Souls, and probably some other ones I don't know the names of. So let's prepare mindfully for those days as we watch the trees let go their leaves, animals stock up for the lean snooze to come, the ground soften under the rain before the freeze. The coming winter, like death, is not an ending, but a resting, another season of transformation. Earth-based traditions have a helpful perspective on these issues of transformation. My dear friend Jonathan White is a Wiccan priest, social critic, teacher, and social worker. At one point, discussing death, He said that part of what his tradition has to teach is that we are all part of the big picture. He also said, being is a team sport, and it's the only game in town. Furthermore, we cannot be parted from this big picture, and our existence remains eternally meaningful in that big picture. This was great consolation to me in my grief. We are never separated from anything else in existence. But from Christianity's Paul of Tarsus to some secular understandings to many New Age doctrines, we learn that the body, especially its soft, oozy, kind of icky parts, most of all when it decays after death, is infinitely less valuable than the mind and less enduring than the soul. Paul even goes so far as to say, the saved soul is incorruptible and the body corruptible. But I think he's wrong. The body is not corruptible in the sense that he means. What do I mean? That's what he means. What do I mean? I mean that ickiness is not corruption. Decay is not corruption. Decomposition and putrefaction are not corruption. Return to earth is anything but corruption. What changes, what is transient or temporary, is simply participating in the greater life of the universe. And so the body is at least as eternal as any other part. I wonder about those teachings that say the saved soul is incorruptible and the body corruptible. Is the soul what we associate with consciousness, interior essence, or even personality? We lose consciousness at death, it's true. And many religions teach that that consciousness moves on to another plane of existence, to a shadowy realm near us, to an intermediate stage between this life and another similar, or to everlasting bliss or eternal agony. In whatever way, religions often teach that the part of us that is most enduring is the part we have the most trouble getting a handle on. We are changed in death. We are changed every moment of existence, and perhaps never more profoundly than when we die. It is the nature of matter, the nature of energy, of existence, to change and change and change and change again. Never destroyed, never created ex nihilo, out of nothing, into some kind of new being. For example, it had always been the case that I was connected to my father, and I'm connected to him now, after his death. It has always been the case that I have had the shape of my father's eyes and the color of my mother's. It has always been the case that my hands have looked, from the time I was a small baby, exactly like my father's. Exactly. And like his mother's before him. I laugh out loud. I talk at inappropriate times. I fall into melancholy. And all these things he did too. That's the obvious part, right? People have children. We are connected to our biological parents in certain ways. And we know that story. But we could take it further to refer to the book of the prophet Jeremiah in the Hebrew scriptures, where we read that God knew us and held us and had all the bits of us, I would say, in an eternity before we were born. There is no part of us that will ever not be, or that ever has not been. No energy, no matter, nothing. Everything that exists now began in that initial flaring forth of the universe. So all this has always been, and all this will always be. In the final analysis, we are ageless. But Catherine, come on, consciousness. We have to talk about consciousness. Because I know when I die, something is lost, and something is lost. That's the hard part for us, the part we grieve when others die, and the part I at least fear losing when I consider my own death. So, I'd like to consider some part of what we lose when we cross the fine and definite boundary of death. Many definitions of consciousness talk about our sense of our thoughts and experiences in time. Consciousness relies on a separate me, an I, founded on an ego structure that we need to give us a sense of separation. But when the mystics talk about higher consciousness, or deeper consciousness, or sometimes God consciousness, I think often what they mean is lack of consciousness, a kind of profound innocence, a lack of reflection on self. Those mystical states seem rather a dissolution into a great sea, the cosmos of all energy and matter. But when our existence has what I might call more brain power, when we live, we find ourselves separate. And that separation allows us to act on our own and others' behalfs. But in a certain way, in a certain frame, it's kind of an illusion, right? Isn't it kind of a trick that consciousness plays so we can act in certain ways to tell us that we're separate in any way? Even those of us who are embalmed and buried in cemetery rows, even we return to our tasks of existence, the works of cause and effect of connectedness. It may take longer for our bodies to break down into their constituent parts, but even while we're in that casket, our being is still participating in existence. And furthermore, Earth will have what is hers, whatever the embalmers say. Everything emerges from something else. Dead or alive, our actions have had consequences. Our choices, our living, our breathing, all these things go out and out and out in concentric circles of effect that never end. Though our names pass out of memory, still, we will always in some way be changing the world. We are all part of the big picture. Nothing, neither height nor depth, nor principalities nor powers, can separate us from what that Paul of Tarsus said is the love of God, and what I would probably call the embrace of the universe. Not only are we carried on in memory, in DNA, and in the effects of our many actions in life, but our deaths become others' lives, and those lives die and fade into new life, forever changing, moving, creating and destroying, and creating again. So there is more to the story. I return, finally, to that last day in October. That day last October, that is. To the moments after we had finished scattering the ashes on the land and into the creek. My father's ashes did not dissolve in the water. After all, they weren't breadcrumbs. They floated down Laurel Run. I watched them until I couldn't see anymore because the creek had gone around a bend. But I know that Laurel Run goes into Slab Cabin Creek, which goes into Spring Creek, down south into the Susquehanna, and finally comes out in the Chesapeake Bay. I can sort of romantically think of my father's parts floating out to sea, hundreds of miles away, and maybe some little bit did so. In any case, what I know is that he continues, taken up into fish, soil, plants, animals, and those little microbes that live in dirt. Soil microbes are always doing their little work, making the ground fertile, using countless particles of other beings, taken from life into death, made back to life again, passing into trees and fungi and the flowers that bloom relentlessly year after year. Giving, always giving, never separate, and always a part of the big picture. Blessed be. Please join me, if you will, in singing our closing hymn number 96, I Cannot Think of Them as Dead.